Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We just wrapped up a great hour with Father Sebastian Walsh, and now we're going to have another tremendous hour talking about sins of speech. This is these are some sins that, you know, they can be sneaky. We don't really think a lot or don't think enough about what we say, how we say it, to whom we say it, and whether we're really building up our brothers and sisters with what we say rather than tearing them down or harming ourselves even by what we say. And to that effect, we have a great new book here called Training the Tongue and Growing Beyond Sins of Speech. And it is written by Father Gregory Pine of the Dominican Order. Father Pine teaches dogmatic and moral theology at the Dominican House of Studies, works as an assistant director of the Thomistic Institute. You may have seen him on his numerous appearances on Pints with Aquinas with our friend Matt Frad, and also on previous occasions being on this very program itself. Father Pine, thank you so much for coming back to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey, my joy. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure to. I should mention to anyone who was not tuning in last hour, you've noticed I'm not Cy Kellett. Cy Kellett is out for the day. My name is Thomas Graff, and I am the social media manager most of the time here at Catholic Answers. And that is why I was very intrigued and very excited to have the opportunity to host this show with Father Pine about this topic, because I don't think I need to go into too much detail to say that, yes, social media is a bit of a multiplier for sins of speech. Maybe not necessarily speech said out loud, but definitely a lot of detraction, a lot of insult, a lot of anger that is just stirred up and really encouraged by how these platforms work. So I was very interested in reading this book and seeing what we had to say about those sins. And yet I found a lot more than that in this book. I expected this book, Father Pine, to be, you know, just a treatment mostly of sins of speech, but you did a lot more than that in this book. Instead, what you did was you talked first about virtues of speech. You divided this book into different topics about different kinds of speech. And then you said you wanted to talk first about virtues of speech and only after that get into discussing sins of speech. Can you explain a little bit why you decided to do it that way?
Yeah, the basic idea is that when we focus on sins, we tend to narrow our scope in the moral life, and I think that we miss out on a lot of what God intends for us to take in. So, like, the image that I use in the beginning of the book is a garden. Let's say that you have as your goal the tending of this garden, and let's say that you set for your proximate goal eliminating all of the weeds in the garden, that is to say, rooting out any bad growth. Well, let's say that you're really effective at this task. Sorry, my chair is betraying me as I go further and further down. I probably should have replaced this chair like 3 years ago, but
We still see you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So then at the end of the day, let's say you're very effective at identifying and rooting out weeds. At the end of the day, all you have is an empty garden, which isn't too terribly interesting as far as gardens go. But if you set for your goal the cultivation of good growth, that is to say the beautification of the space with all manner of cool annuals and perennials and whatever else one puts therein, then weeds might still crop up and they might be distracting and otherwise dismaying, but ideally less so, in that they'll have been pushed to the edge of the garden, the periphery of the garden. They'll be easier to identify, easier to root out, because you've got for yourself a goal, a proximate goal, which is far more, excellent and worthy of human striving. So I think that, like, when it comes to sin, we're responsible for, I think it's better to try to crowd out than it is to try to root out, because it's by God's grace that we conquer. It's by his work in us that we accomplish anything.
888-318-7884 is the number to call. 888-318-7884. If you want to discuss sins of speech with Father Pine, if you want to discuss virtues of speech with Father Gregory Pine, 888-318-7884 is the number to call. So, Father, I'm going to come right at this. Jesus says, anyone who calls his brother fool is liable to the fires of hell. And also elsewhere, he says that on the day of judgment, men will render account for every careless word they utter. To borrow a line that the apostles say, that the disciples say elsewhere, who then can be saved? I mean, those are some really strong words for things that we really don't think that often about. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, for men, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Insofar as left to our own devices, we are capable of certain modest yields, but nothing that will get us to heaven. And so I think it's helpful at the outset to recollect ourselves and our status, one, as creatures. Namely, we depend upon God for everything. So what do you have that you have not received? If therefore you have received it, why do you boast as if it were your own? And then second, as adopted sons and daughters of the Most High God. So the reason for which we have good grounds, or the reason for which we have, I suppose, good cause to hope that we can achieve or that we can attain to heaven is because he's a provident father. And he's promised to give good gifts to his children. And, you know, what child asks his father for a loaf of bread and instead gets a scorpion to, I suppose, make the sacred scriptures a bit more compact. So the idea here is that the posture that we assume in these types of exercises isn't one of presumption, or it's not one of pretending that we have everything that we need in order to flourish. Rather, it's to be recollected in our dependency, or to be recollected and the fact that we are beloved of the Father, and then to lay kind of claim to that promise, which is in a certain sense our inheritance, our co-inheritance in Christ. So yeah, I mean, it's like a super daunting task, but God doesn't permit us to be tempted beyond our strength. He doesn't permit us to pass through trials through which he does not also provide a way through. So I think that man can stand to be confident in the spiritual life because God is good. That's the basic idea.
Amen to that. That's what we always have to keep in mind when we start to hear about these sins that we don't really think that much about. Again, the tongue, as St. James says, you quote him at length right at the beginning of the book. The tongue is a very small member, but it can set a whole forest ablaze. Thanks to the words that we utter carelessly. 888-318-7884 is the number to call. If you want to ask Father Pine if he thinks a certain type of speech is a sin or not, you can call that number. If you want to ask him, you know, what should we be using our speech for? What kind of things can we do to build up our neighbor rather than tear him down with our speech? Call the number 888-318-7884. Father, can gossip really send me to hell?
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest, I don't think often of the experience of hell. And so I know there are various kind of like commendations of practices of meditation which would have us think about hell as a prospect. I don't do that too terribly much. It's kind of like, so Brother Lawrence of the Resurrection and the Practice of the Presence of God, he gives a similar description where he says, you know, at the beginning of my religious life, I made every effort to follow these kind of prescribed modes for meditation, and I found that they were unfruitful. So then I just kind of resolved at a certain point to recollect myself in God's holy presence and then let him take care of the rest. So I think that, like, yeah, I mean, can gossip send you to hell? Insofar as it's a mortal sin, yeah, sure, undoubtedly. I just don't think that that's the type of thing, like, yeah, here we go. Slow down, Father Gregory. I just think that we should be more interested in edifying speech in the sense that, like, okay, so gossip. Why do people gossip? Any number of reasons, I suspect. So some of these stuff, like detraction, for instance, or calumny, perhaps we've been hurt by somebody or embarrassed by somebody or ashamed in our relationship with somebody, and so we talk about them as a way by which to kind of settle a score. You know, we've been hurt, and so we try to hurt in turn. But a lot of time with gossip, it's more so a matter of idleness. It's motivated by kind of like vacuousness at the heart of the human condition than a positive hurt that we've received. Or it's like these people are part of an in-crowd, and we want to be part of an in-crowd, and so we traffic in people's secrets or their good reputations as a way by which to tender the currency so that we can gain admission. But like at the end of the day, like what we want is communion. And in gossip, we settle for a kind of fell communion. So I think that, like, what is perhaps more interesting is heaven. What is heaven? Heaven is communion par excellence, the communion of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, into which we, as his adopted sons and daughters, are welcome. And so the question then becomes, like, how do I cultivate this genuine communion? Like, how do I live towards that at present through the use of the faculty of speech? And then one might discover as a result thereof that gossip becomes less tempting, or it becomes less so a part of one's life. So yeah, it can send you to hell, but I think there are other things to think about, other things to meditate upon.
Certainly, and you do a lot of that in this book, Training the Tongue. That's going to take us to our first break. There are 5 lines open right now, 1 caller on the line. So plenty of room for you if you want to ask Father Gregory Pyne about sins of speech and virtues of speech as well. So call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Like I said, we'll be back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
Hello, Father Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm fine as frog here, Miss Julia. What can we do for you?
I love that response. It is so Father Mitch. Oh, I love you so much. I love everyone there. You guys are absolutely amazing.
I truly had the feeling that I would rather lose the use of my right arm, and I'm right-handed, than not have access to EWTN. It's so vital.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thomas Graff, social media manager here at Catholic Answers, filling in for Cy Kellett. And we're talking with Father Gregory Pyne about his new book, Training the Tongue and Growing Beyond Sins of Speech, available now from Emmaus Road Publishing, which is a very, very fine book. I should have said right from the outset, Father Pyne, congratulations on a very well-written book. I enjoyed reading it quite a bit. You had a really good approach. We talked about it earlier, about talking about the virtues of speech rather than just focusing a lot on the vices of speech. And you said that in the answer just before the break. It's more interesting in a way to talk about what gets us to heaven. And so on a related note, it seems like if we want to know what sins of speech are better, then we should really know what is speech for. If sins of speech are disordered speech, then what is speech if it's correctly ordered?
Yeah, so basic idea here is that speech is for communion in the sense that, we live at the horizon of creation. We're like a kind of strange meeting ground of the spiritual and the bodily. Our bodily life makes it such that, like, where another person is, there I cannot quite be. Like, I can be close to that person, but I can't actually occupy the same space as that person because of the way that matter excludes other matter. But our spiritual life is such that I can actually think another person's thoughts, or I can like experience another person's affections to some degree or extent. But in order for us to attain to that, we have to do it like in and through the body. So the basic idea is this, like I have to give expression to what I think and to what I love, and I need to concretize that through word and gesture and whatever other ways, so that I can communicate it to another person who takes that up into his or her spiritual life. And then that affords us the possibility of actually coming together, like actually sharing. So I think the purpose of speech is that we, as embodied souls or ensouled bodies, can, by a certain artistry, give expression to our spiritual life so that that spiritual life can be shared in its bodily dimensions too. So the promise is, in effect, that the distance that we experience in relationship can be bridged, or the alienation that we experience in our lives together can be, in a certain way, resolved. You know, so I think that the promise is that we can come together. That's the basic idea. And so we seek to cultivate our habits, or we seek to cultivate certain virtues so as to safeguard that use and, truth be told, to like kind of heal it, grow it, mature it, empowered, embellish it, however you want to describe that. So the basic idea is the point of speech is to come together.
Perfect. Perfect. Love that, because that's heaven, right? Is perfect communion. So if that's our goal, then our speech should be oriented toward that goal. 888-318-7884 is the number to call about sins of speech. 888-318-7884. We have a couple callers on the line now. Maria is calling from Kokomo, Indiana, watching us on YouTube. Maria, you are on the air with Father Gregory Pine. Go ahead with your question.
Boy, that's an honor to be on the air with Father Gregory Pine.
I know, right?
What anybody says. And I was a secular Carmelite, so don't hold that against me. Anyway.
Ooh, we got some order beef.
No. I think if I had a chance to be a secular Dominican, I'd jump at it. But anyway. My question is more about cussing than anything else. That's one of my worst habits, especially when my temper increases, my mouth, boom. That's what goes next is my temper and my language. It's got to be sinful on some level. Can Father talk about that a little bit? And does he know of any good habits that can possibly put away that one bad habit somewhere that I can wrestle the demon and kill it as much as possible?
What do you think, Father?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have a classmate, actually, in the Dominicans who is from Kokomo or Carmel, Indiana, that region, basically. And I think he was describing at one point that the world's largest Dairy Queen is there. He was recounting this story to our retreat master as we were preparing for our simple profession. This particular gentleman is British, and he said, "Ooh, who is this unfortunate woman?" Not knowing that Dairy Queen was a place where you got ice cream.
Awesome.
But, okay, so it's a great question. I think that my judgment on this matter, and I think people differ, but my judgment on this matter is that cussing isn't intrinsically evil in the sense that, like, to say a word which in the culture is understood to be somewhat crass is not necessarily a sin. And there are reasons for which we cuss. Obviously, there's a kind of sonic slap to cussing. And, so it can feel good to describe our experience in somewhat, violent terminology. Because it just allows us a kind of release. It gives us a kind of power over the events, whatever it is. Now, where I think that cussing can become sinful is if it undermines, one, our moral creativity. If it's like the only words to which we advert when we're feeling angry or frustrated, it can actually debase the quality of our human vocabulary and grammar. Another thing is, like, just in terms of prudence, sometimes when we cuss, it can kind of swing the door open to other sins. Like, if you cuss in company, you're effectively communicating to those, with whom you are gathered that, you can let your hair down and say the things you actually think. So there's a real risk, I think, that when we cuss, it opens the door to detraction and calumny and gossip and other things besides. And then there's also the question of scandal. Like, a lot of people, it's in their estimation, crass speech is bad. And I think that's a right estimation to make. But and then they see a Christian cussing and they think to themselves, oh, I guess, I don't know, really, this is hard to make sense of. So I think those things are all at stake. But I'd like to lean on the first as perhaps most important or principled, in the sense that I think that we should be trying to cultivate our faculty of speech, not like become highbrow or hoity-toity, but that we should cultivate it with a certain moral creativity so that we can get better at expressing what it is that we feel or what it is that we experience. And I think that we should be especially sensitive to the way in which verbal violence can actually undermine human communion. So it's not insignificant that swear words are often taken from the bedroom or the bathroom, and those are both places of vulnerability. And so the thing is, when we treat our vulnerability somewhat violently, I think it makes us less willing to be genuinely vulnerable. Like, we actually want to share our lives, but instead of doing so in the most excellent ways, we settle for these less excellent ways. So those are some arguments that I might use, and I hope they're helpful to you.
Maria, did that help you out?
Father, thank you. Yes, a great deal. Thank you, Father, and God bless you.
Excellent. Thank
you. God bless you, too.
Thank you for that call, Maria. Next, listening from Tulsa, Oklahoma, we have David, who's listening on St. Michael Radio. David, you are on the air with Father Gregory Pine. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Father Gregory, I have a question about taking the Lord's name in vain. If you're an actor in a movie, is it ever okay to do that? Like, let's say you're trying to, portray a bad guy and he needs to be bad. So does that make it okay for the actor to take the Lord's name in vain? And then for us as watchers of the movie, is there any point where we become complicit for tolerating it in the movies we watch?
So first question, is your last name Niles by any chance?
It is.
Oh, fascinating. Then I have a question for you. What's the deal with the rosary?
what is this, a crossover episode? What's going on here?
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. It's our boy, nice. David Niles.
Nice. Welcome, David.
Hey.
Yeah. David, I don't know if you know this about yourself, but you're a joy. I think you're a genuinely excellent man, and I always enjoy our time together, regardless of whether it's a phone call that goes from Tulsa through San Diego to Washington, D.C. I feel close. So great question. Great question about blasphemous speech, taking the name of the Lord in vain. So my estimation is that and this could be wrong. And I know that Father Chad Ripperger, I think, has something slightly different to say about this. So I think there is scope here for legitimate disagreement or for people to kind of host ongoing conversation as to the best way in which. I think it depends on the maturity of the viewer, in part, to answer the full suite of questions that you propose. But in play acting, that's a certain genre of speech, all right, which makes understood to those present and makes such for the individual that what we're doing here isn't kind of straightforward living of life. Rather, it's a kind of put-on living of life where I act out things proper to another individual. And in those instances, I think that there is some scope for crass speech and even potentially blasphemous speech as proper to true artistry. You know, so like there is reason to stage plays which include blasphemous individuals. You know, you can think like plays in which martyrs are put to death. If their persecutors were only to speak in the most proper of terms, we might suspect them of a certain insincerity, or we might suspect them of a kind of like bolderized script. And so I think it can be appropriate to portray people who are blasphemous as blasphemous. For the actor who portrays that role, there's a difference between what he does materially and then what he does formally. Formally speaking, he is performing an act of play acting. And so his words are meant to communicate what the script intends them to communicate. And so he can join himself to the portrayal of the script without joining himself to the actual formal blasphemous act. When it comes to our reception of those things, I think it's true of all manner of like artistic genres that there are certain things which are very hard for us to take in well. So like sexuality, you know, like nudity would be a, there are certain settings in which artistry, I think, can portray the human form unadorned, as it were. But I think for an especially sensitive man who finds that always and everywhere distracting, at least, and tempting and basically near occasioning beyond that, I think that he is called to a higher standard when it comes to the avoidance of the near occasion of sin. And if there are persons who suspect that just kind of like listening to music or watching television or movies or even plays that deal loosely with the Lord's name will induce them to do the same, then I think that might be a legitimate reason for them to draw away. And so this might be a reason for which you wouldn't show it to your kids, because they don't yet have the moral apparatus to recognize in fine shades of detail the difference between play acting and using the name of the Lord in vain in a sinful fashion. So I don't know if that's any of that's helpful for you, Davey, but if not, push back and I can add further.
No, I think that's fantastic. I knew that I would get a good answer from you, Father Gregory Pine. And I want you to know that I have long suspected you of being less than human, because every time I talk to you, you sound as if you're reading all of your responses out of a book or something.
So, I mean, possibly like, this book right here?
I don't know how your brain works like that. But it's incredible.
It's that Dominican precision, just that order of thought that they get by just marinating in St. Thomas for so long.
Exactly.
But thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you, David.
Hey, my joy. Thanks, David. God love your family. And give a hug to Adam when you see him next.
Thanks for that call, David. Thanks for the surprise crossover episode of, Catholic Answers Live, Catholic Man Show. And I can't believe I neglected to mention this, Father, but your episode, your podcast, Godsplaining, that you do with the Dominicans, that we just had pretty much a three-parter crossover episode with that call from David Niles. I wonder, in regards to that last question, maybe as viewers, we don't bear any culpability for watching a movie with blasphemy, but maybe as something proactive we can do, if we really want to watch the movie, maybe something proactive we can do is try to make reparation in the moment. I remember I went to a small Catholic college, Thomas Aquinas College, with very Catholic student body, and one evening on a weekend, I came across some guys in a dorm who were watching Die Hard, which has plenty of blasphemies in it, taking the name Lord's name in vain. And every time that happened, one guy who was watching, I would just see him make the sign of a cross and just make quick reparation right there for that, and then continue to enjoy a very well-made movie, I should say.
Boom. Yeah, I like that. There's a little thing in there about that, specifically about the blasphemous use of the Lord's name, especially. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, I wouldn't be as concerned in the context of a movie. You know, I do think that that's a good instinct, the one that your friend displayed. I'd be more concerned in the context of a conversation, you know, because there, I think it's safe to assume that the person who blasphemes does so with blasphemous intent. So, yes, reparation is a great thing to have in your back pocket.
Great. That brings us to the halfway point of this show. Having a great time talking about sins of speech with Father Gregory Pine. If you want to get on the air like David did, call 888-318-7884. We'll be right back.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the Church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
The Stigmata, the appearance of Christ's wounds on ordinary believers. Is it real or fake? What's the evidence? And if real, what could God's reason be for causing this? In God's Wounds, author John Clark offers what may be the most thorough, honest, and faithful reckoning with the stigmata ever written, examining the evidence and making sense of it both medically and spiritually. Order God's Wounds today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is the number to call if you want to talk to the esteemed Father Gregory Pine about sins of speech. His new book, Training the Tongue and Growing Beyond Sins of Speech, is out now from Emmaus Road Publishing. You can buy it anywhere good Catholic books are sold, I believe. And we're having a great time here. Fill-in host, I should say, Thomas Graff, filling in for Cy Kellogg, having a great time talking here with Father Pine about sins of speech, about this very important and often overlooked area of our spiritual life that needs some training, probably more than we think. And but before we go back to the phones, in studio, we have a special guest here at Catholic Answers. Every now and then, fewer know this than they should, but you can just come to Catholic Answers anytime you want. If you're in San Diego, you can just come to the office. We'll give you a tour. And if you're here during the show, we'll say, hey, you want to go into the studio and ask the guest a question? And doing that right now is Jack from Springfield, Illinois.
Hello.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
Doing wonderful. How are you?
Great. I'm having a great time hosting this banger of a show. What brings you to our office today?
Well, my buddy Luke started working with y'all about a year ago, and he invited me to come out. So
correct.
Here I am.
Correct, he did. Luke Bender, our mastermind whiz kid behind our YouTube channel, is taking it to new heights. And he's got cool friends, as it turns out, after all. Cool friends with fantastic mustaches,
well,
I must
thank
say.
You.
You're welcome.
It's taken many years.
Many years. Okay. We've got like the three stages of male facial hair represented on the show. Baby face here, mustache there, and then full beard in all its majesty with Father Pine. We just need Jimmy Akin to really complete the quartet, because I think Jimmy Akin's beard is a different category altogether.
Or Boniface Hicks, Father Boniface Hicks.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Is he the one who's with
similar
the
similar resplendence?
Is he the one with the Friars of the Renewal who's doing stuff with Ascension now?
So he is the one who is a monk at St. Vincent's Abbey in Latrobe,
that's
Pennsylvania.
It. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I was just thinking of another.
One who's, who,
yeah.
It's
on.
All right, man. The CFRs also have nice beards.
Yes, indeed.
Father Columba's got a nice beard.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Father Malachy's got a nice beard.
Man, we could go on and on, but
we could just spend the next 30 minutes listing dudes with nice beards.
We really could. Actually, Bender, that sounds like a great YouTube YouTube video. Let's just ranking every Catholic beard in media. We're gonna get that together and do a big old collab show on that.
And then all the Eastern
churches. Before you make a smooth transition.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I was just gonna say best mustache in the Catholic space is that of Tom Ward, who is a professor of philosophy at Baylor University. It's like in the Tom Selleck stratosphere. It's an incredible mustache.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up later, because Tom Ward Google search shows an actor who I've never known before. But yes, thank you for that recommendation.
He looks like an actor.
Okay.
The mustache is so good that he looks like an actor.
Okay, noted. All right, Jack, now that we're done talking about the much more important facial hair discussion, what question did you have for Father Pine about sins of speech?
Well, originally it was about, you know, who has the best beard.
Oh, wow. Well,
Catholic
we covered
Church.
It. Sweet.
Nice.
All right. Bye, Jack.
my actual question is about lying. So is it always sinful to lie, or are there instances where it is morally okay, such as if you're playing a game or maybe your girlfriend asks, you know, if she looks bad in this dress or something like that?
Yeah. Good question. Short answer is there are different genres of speech or pronouncements. This kind of came up with David Niles' question. Like play acting is one in which it would be obviously permissible to speak a material lie. Or in the event that, like you're playing the game Mafia, the rules are such that it's understood that those who are members of the Mafia are going to deceive. So like within certain genres of speech, some speaking contrary to your mind with an intention to deceive is not only anticipated, but in fact intended. But in a situation in which you are asked to recount the facts, or, you know, like the genre of speech dictates, this is a time in which I recount the facts, then no, it's never permissible to lie. So like in the case where, you know, like if your wife asks if she looks good in this dress, I think people assume that like lying to your wife in that situation is a good thing to do, but I don't know that it's actually a good thing to do. So like, for instance, I don't know if have you seen the movie About Time?
I have not.
With Domhnall Gleeson, Rachel McAdams. I recommend it. There's a scene in which she's trying on dresses, and she asks him if each dress looks good, and he just says like yes to each one, and he's at his wit's end. And then by the end, she's come back to the first dress and she decides that it's the one that she actually wants to wear. And he's like, just completely confounded or otherwise bewildered by the situation, which goes to show that like when somebody asks, do I look good in this dress? You know, there's a lot that's entailed by that question. It's like, hey, do you love me? You know, let's say this gal gave birth like 3 months previously and she's still losing a few of those pounds. Am I still attractive? You know, like she's asking all kinds of questions. I won't go into all the details because it's just like three dudes sitting around a table and we don't need to do this. but I think that when you become willing to adulterate your word, then you become less reliable and then your word matters less. Whereas if your wife knows that you will tell her exactly what you think, she might hesitate to ask in certain circumstances. But if you use that unadulterated word to communicate to her that you love her and that you find her attractive, irrespective of how recently she gave birth and how many pounds she weighs and stuff like that, then I think it actually gets to the heart of what is desirable in that relationship, which is like genuine communion. Or people cite the example of like the Gestapo officer who knocks on the door. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, now in the circumstances, what are you supposed to do if he says, do you have Jews in your basement? Some people say lie. I don't think that you should ever encourage anyone to lie, because I don't think that lying is ever good. I think that lying is always bad. If you were to lie, I think it's an officious lie and it's like a venial sin, which in the grand scheme is not that big of a deal. But I don't think that you should ever pervert your moral system in such a way that you end up encouraging venial sin. I think ideally you don't lie, you don't equivocate, you know, you don't say like, oh, there are Jews not too far off, but you evade. You know, so you say something like, yeah, I mean, I just vacuumed. So if you're going to come in, if you would kindly just remove your boots, I'd be super appreciative. You know, you've posed a kind of obstacle to easy ingress, but you didn't do it in such a way that where you're like, don't come to my house, you know, like in a way that causes suspicion. You know, but that requires presence of mind. It requires a certain moral creativity. So I think when people start ending up encouraging other people to lie, it's often because of a lack of moral creativity. Like, we've dichotomized the situation and said, either you do this or you do that, so you have to do that. It's like, nah. I mean, St. Augustine has two treatises on this question, and he anticipates this particular query. And he says, should I incur death of soul so that another does not incur death of body? Which is pretty savage, but you can just like basically count on St. Augustine to be pretty savage in practically every instance.
Yeah.
Sure.
So what do you think further? You've got follow-ups, so I can feel them.
Well, I mean, there's a lot there. I guess my next question, like following that, so you're saying like there's a moral creativity kind of necessary for like the Gestapo example that you brought up. But let's say someone, for whatever reason, isn't able to come up with an example. The direct question is asked. It would be morally wrong to give them, like, the location of Jews that are being hid away, like in the Holocaust. So is someone who isn't able to come up with a reasonable way to prevent them from entering or to deceive, and I guess not deceive, but what do you do if you're not able to just not give them an answer in that way?
Yeah, I mean, so it's a tough situation because no answer is effectively giving up the Jews. You know, that's why it's so pressure filled. So presumably you agreed to shelter these people, so you should do what lies within your power to shelter these people. But the understanding is that you will do what lies within your power, morally speaking, to shelter them, in the sense that, like, your efforts at sparing someone else's life shouldn't incur sin or vice in your own soul. Fact of the matter is, like, most of us aren't good liars. We're not convincing liars because we're not practiced at it. And I think that's good. To become a good liar, you have to practice at it. So I think it's also, I think it can be foolish on the part of some people who examine the situation when they say, like, oh, lie, tell a convincing lie. That's the only way to go. It's like, I mean, I don't know that we're capable of telling a convincing lie. I think that we're probably just going to get really nervous and seize up. And maybe tell a lie, or maybe tell an unconvincing equivocation, or whatever it is. But I think the basic idea is, when you shelter those Jews, you ought to, well, then seek to cultivate the moral creativity. So, like, work on the evasions that you're going to deploy. I mean, truth be told, there are better grounds for using lethal force than there are for using lies in the Christian tradition. Mm. You know? Which like, a lot of people are like, what did you say? You can kill him, but you can't lie to him? That sounds totally insane, because, like, a lot of us are trained to be consequentialists or utilitarians.
Yeah, good
but
point.
As it turns out, that's not how the church wants us to think. Church wants us to think in terms of principles. And the question is a lie a legitimate means of self-defense? And the answer is no. Mm. But is proportionate force a legitimate means of self-defense? And the answer is yes. So, kind of crazy. So, okay. Good news. So,
wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so, if the Gestapo knocks at your door, make sure you're packing. That's what I'm hearing. That's a better answer than I've... That's probably the best answer I've heard of this query so far. Thank you, Father Pine.
I was not expecting that, but that's good to know.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, Jack, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you very much, Father Gregory.
Yeah, thanks.
My joy. Thanks for asking the question.
Thanks for the good question, and thanks for the discussion about facial hair. We'll have that video ranking famous Catholic facial hair very, very soon. Right, Bender? That's right. By the way, Father Pine, during that answer, I looked up Professor Thomas Ward. Is that who it was? Tom Ward. You were not kidding. Oh, my gosh. What a stash. And not only that, but it's Lalo Salamanca from Better Call Saul staring right at me. It's uncanny how much he looks like one of the most terrifying villains on television, if I'm being totally honest. So that would be a very interesting class to have with him. Covering so much ground on this hour with Father Gregory Pyne, and that already takes us to our final break before the end of the show. So if you want to get on with Father Pyne and talk about sins of speech and maybe facial hair, call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We will be right back after this.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Pope Francis tells us, becoming a priest or a man or woman religious is not primarily our own decision. Rather, it's the response to a call of love. Do you feel as if God may be calling you to religious life? If so, contact a religious order faithful to the magisterium or your diocesan vocation. For information on the priesthood or religious life, visit ewtn.com/religious life today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thomas Graff, social media manager here at Catholic Answers, filling in for Cy Kellett, and having a great time talking with Father Gregory Pyne about sins of speech. His new book, Training the Tongue and Growing Beyond Sins of Speech, is out now from Emmaus Road Publishing. And we are discussing facial hair, discussing lying, discussing the use of speech and why it's ordered ultimately towards communion. And we're getting good questions all around. So, Father, do you mind if we go back to the phones?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. I think that's Gyla. Is that? I'm so sorry. I don't know how to pronounce this name. Am I getting it right? Oh, and she's gone, just like that. That's too bad. We had someone on the air, and I wish I knew how to pronounce her name. But she had a question. I'll just read it on air because she might have been waiting a while to ask that. But she had a question. Is it wrong to say GD? The profanity that sounds like that. She said her dad said it all the time. Is it wrong to say that?
I think so.
All right, open and shut case then. That's right.
Yeah.
I remember another one of my friends in college, his take on this was, with all profanity, but especially with stuff like that, you should really think about what it is you're saying. Like, we just throw, someone accustomed to saying that would just throw it out without thinking, but think about what you're saying. You're saying, God send thing to hell. And that's an incredibly weighty thing to think about and talk about so loosely.
Indeed it is. Yeah, no, I think that's the type of thing that, yep, we can work on rooting out at the outset.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and 888-318-7884 is the number to call. We're getting some calls rolling in slowly, so we'll get back to them as quickly as we can. I did have a question. We've been talking about lies, but it's interesting to think about detraction and gossip, specifically those sins. Those are where you are, well, especially in the case of detraction, sometimes in the case of gossip, you're saying things that are true. So how can it be a sin to tell the truth?
Basically, it can be a sin to tell the truth that isn't yours to tell. In the sense that a person has a right to his reputation, and while there is a certain goodness in transparency, there's also a certain goodness in discretion. And when things that are true of a certain individual are shared when they perhaps ought not to be shared, then it can be damaging, it can be hurtful, and we should seek to be good stewards of other people's reputations. So, like, I mean, I'll share this story because I've shared it in other public settings, but I got, like, this wicked stomach bug at Seek, like, I guess it'd be 14 months ago. And so I live in an intergenerational community, and when you have well-stocked, supplied or I should say, yeah, well-stocked medical supply closets. You have everything that you need in a pinch. And so I like delivered my second talk at SEEK wearing a diaper. But if I were to share that with one person in a private setting, and then that person were to like go on the internet and be like, Father Gregory gave a talk wearing a diaper, you know, like people would hear that and think that is ridiculous. He is a ridiculous human being, and thinking that, they would be right. But it would also, it could potentially do damage to my reputation. And on account of the fact that I shared it with another individual in a kind of secrecy, or, you know, with the understanding that that individual would not share it any further, it's not the type of thing that he has occasion. I mean, he shouldn't share it beyond that. That's the basic idea. So now, let's say that your friend is about to start dating a dude, and you know from a third party that this dude is bad news. And so you take the opportunity to kind of warn her against potential abuse or violence. You know, so it can be good to share those true things, even of a semi-secretive nature, if it's potentially a matter of harm, you know, things like that. So, yeah. I hope that's helpful. Is that helpful?
Absolutely. Yeah, you made the distinction very clear there. But just to be clear, though, now that you have said it for the whole internet that you gave a talk at SEEK in a diaper, we can just go out and proclaim that to everyone, right? I mean, it's out there in the open.
You can.
Not that I
it's
would.
It's out there in the open.
Not that
Thank
I would,
you.
Of course.
I appreciate that.
And yeah, you,
steward of my, not so much my good name as my weird name.
that's a really good thing to steward as well, I think. We need more weird Catholics. I want to get to Emma's question, which is really good. She doesn't want to go on the air, but Emma was calling from Hayden, Idaho. And apropos of our conversation about lying, she says, Rahab lied, but she is a biblical hero. What is the deal with that?
Yeah, so St. Augustine actually asks that question about Rahab. He asked the question about the Hebrew midwives, Pua and Shipra. So in both cases, the individual lies, and in both cases, the individual is commended. What St. Augustine says is that in both cases, you have two separate acts. You have a lying and then a kind of charitable protecting, and those individuals are commended for their charitable protecting and not for their lying. That's his basic breakdown of the situation in both the De Mendacio and the Contra Mendacio, I think. I think it occurs in both treatises. So yeah, there are various situations where Old Testament characters tell lies and seem to come in for praise, but typically they come in for praise for charity, not for falsity.
So it's a bit like they're a little confused, but they've got the spirit.
Well, if there were other means, there are always other means, but if they had deployed other means in service of the same end, we would extol them all the more. That's the basic idea, I think.
Fair enough. 888-318-7884 is the number to call, and now the callers are coming in. So let's go on to Cindy calling from Midland, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Cindy, you are on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Father. I was calling to ask if you had someone in your life who used the Lord's name in vain commonly, what would you say to them to discourage that?
Yeah. I think it depends on the temperament of the person, but I'd say that some people you correct. So if it's your children, for instance, and you still have care of those children, you can correct them in justice and rather straightforward fashion. If it's not somebody over whom you have care, then you might correct them in charity. And if it's somebody perhaps, yeah, with whom you're not wholly at ease or with whom you think the conversation might not go too well, you do it more after the manner of an appeal. It's like, hey, listen, you know, I know that you don't answer to me, and obviously people take advice, they don't take advice, they take encouragement, they don't take encouragement. You know, you can kind of set it up in whatever way you want, but kind of more couch it by way of appeal. It's just, you know, when you say that, I find it hurtful because it's the most precious name. And I don't always know how best to bring it up or to address it. But if you could try, I'd be super grateful. You know, obviously some people will take that seriously. Other people will not take that seriously. But then in the circumstances, you can do what you can to make little acts of reparation. So whenever the person does that, you know, you can take the name of the Lord to your lips by way of, you know, adoration or by way of praise. But those would be some initial thoughts. I don't know if that's at all helpful.
Cindy actually dropped right after asking the question, but that was very helpful to me, I thought. So, Father Pine, thank you for that. You did devote a whole chapter in your book to fraternal correction, to the virtue of speech that, you know, helps our neighbor get back on track. And I got to say, it was a very good chapter, but as a conflict-averse person myself, it was a hard read. Because it's not fun to do that. So what would you say to someone who is very averse to telling someone that they're doing something wrong?
Yeah, I'd say, so the Lord made you as he made you, and he wants to grow you as he intends to grow you. And you at least have to admit the possibility that he might be growing you in confidence, right? Or he might be growing you in fortitude. And that's going to require that you cooperate with what it is that he's accomplishing in your life. So I'd say don't ever define yourself by your weakness. Don't ever define yourself by something not essential to, yeah, like the plans that God has for you. And then, you know, you can try it out in small ways. I think most fraternal correction is done by way of affirmation. You got to be able to see in people what they can't see in themselves, like affirm things into existence. So it's like appeal to their nobility of spirit. Appeal to a kind of boldness that remains is yet to be expressed, and I think you'll probably have more success.
Now, what about the opposite error of someone who loves to do nothing but correct everyone about everything? What would you say to them?
So I don't know exactly what to say to them. I think, yeah, most people who do this, they typically pick up on it after a while that it's not going too terribly well and that they ought to rein it in. Some people don't, but I think that's more a matter of emotional intelligence than anything else. So sometimes it's a matter of pride when people think that they're better than, but sometimes it's just a matter of like a kind of maladroit approach to things social, and that's really hard to teach. So yeah, you can do what you can, but sometimes you can't do much.
Might just have to try and correct the corrector, but that's that gets into weird territory philosophically. Is there an uncorrected corrector? Well, God, I suppose. What? that was a dumb question to ask. Of course there is. Let's go on real quick before I tie myself into more knots. Let's go to Genevieve calling from Florida. Genevieve, we're getting close to the end of the show, so could you please be quick with your question for Father Pine?
Oh, I'll be as quick as possible.
Yeah, no worries. You got a little
bit. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you for having me on, both of you. Yeah. Hi, Father. So I am a teacher of high schoolers, and I've been noticing recently, well, in general, speech is a hard thing for regulation, but specifically one student falling into a lot of what I would call word vomit, where it's just like gonna answer every and any question with whatever that comes into his mind in the classroom, and this kind of just builds up and builds up and builds up to the point where it's like here like callous kind of jokes and just a lot of goofing off constantly, you know, in the classroom. So my question comes to you, like, how does one shut this down without shutting down sort of the spirit of the student? Because obviously some good fruit comes with engagement, but also at the same time, all of this building up of callousness of speech is clearly not good for his soul or good for his classmates, et cetera. But yeah, what do you think a good approach to this situation would be?
Yeah, I think to a large extent in the 21st century, a lot of us take an approach that's kind of therapeutic or managerial. Like we think to a certain extent that it's our responsibility to help the person kind of cope with life or adjust to life. We think it's our responsibility to kind of manage the individual to the extent that we can. But there are some situations which are just kind of like unfixable and unmanageable. And so it's in those situations where an appeal to justice can actually be fruitful. So I think that like, if you feel like you're able to bring them along, great, bring them along. If you don't feel like you're able to bring them along, like it's getting worse or like it's spiraling, then you can just appeal to the ordinary means of, you know, behavior correction or discipline that you have in place at the high school. You know, it doesn't make you unmerciful or uncharitable. It just makes you Yeah, a good teacher. So I'd say, it's not helpful when an individual, for instance, dominates airwaves or conversation. So I'm going to have to leave it at that. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks for that question, Genevieve, and apologies to everyone who we couldn't get to this hour, but we had a great hour talking with you, Father Pine. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's have you again sometime soon. Training the Tongue and Growing Beyond Sins of Speech is available now from Emmaus Road Publishing. Get it anywhere where good Catholic books are sold. And that wraps it up for this show of Catholic Answers Live. Thank you all so much for hanging with me for these 2 hours. And it's been a great pleasure and a great honor to serve you all. I will see you again on Wednesday when I fill in again for Cy Kellett. And I'll see you then, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.